Please note, on this episode of the Territory Story podcast, there is discussion about a story related to child sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, Pete and Leon. Just wanted to drop you a line and let you know how much I really enjoy the Territory Story podcast. I like how this has evolved into a weekly news roundup as well as, you know, the deep dive into those people's lives that you interview each week. Oh, it's really fascinating to me how normal everyday people and those who have helped build the territory are surprisingly interesting in their life journeys. I just wouldn't have thought it prior to hearing these podcasts. I think it's in these moments that we can reflect on our own aspects of our lives, you know, how we've grown, you know, how simple things in our own reflection can actually be interesting to other people, because I couldn't imagine my life is interesting, but you never know, maybe it is. I just wanted to drop you a note on the evolution of the Weekends with Walshy sort of aspect of the podcast. This feedback comes from a totally constructive place, as I want to see it continue into the future. First of all, I just want to say that I love the smooth tones of Chris's voice. It's something about his Canadian accent. I actually really prefer listening him round up his Newsweek every week rather than actually reading his writing. Actually, probably don't tell him that. Probably doesn't want to hear that. Anyway, one thing I've definitely noted over the 2 years I've been listening is I feel that Walshy definitely is becoming more comfortable with the two of you and often forgets he's recording a podcast. At times he gets all worked up and clearly states his opinions, and at times it's downright insulting to Chalker and the iKick conditioner and, gosh, even Files. And let's be honest, I might agree, but that it doesn't sound very objective anymore. There's always two sides to every story, and he used to reflect on both sides, but not so much anymore. I think as times he forgets we're listening, and, you know, it's not just three bros at a pub. I just really worry that Chris needs to be careful that he's not being regarded as sort of blindsided. I don't think he is. I think he's just frustrated about not getting comment back from these people when he sends questions, but it's playing into Labor's hands of that hate page angle. I just think it's something that needs reflection on. Oh, also, thank you for extending the Weekends with Walshy to around 70 minutes or more. It takes me around 75 minutes or so to mow my lawn on the ride in every week. Yes, I live rural and I mow my neighbour's verges too. So the news wrap is perfect for me to listen to while I putter around making my garden look amazing and, you know, dodging those darn plovers. But as I said, thank you so much for your work. Keep it going. I just really worry that, we just need to play to both sides of every story. That's all. Love you guys' work. Bye.
This is the Territory Story Podcast with Leon Logan-Nathan and Peter Gowers. Thanks to Opie Dennis Digital Marketing, your local digital marketing agency.
Hello there. Welcome. This is the Territory Story Podcast and it's a weekend, which means time for Weekends with Walshy. My name is Peter Gowers. I'd like to introduce you now to my co-host, the man that's been on this trip for the best part of 3 years, Mr. Leon Logan-Nathan. How are you, mate?
I'm good. In actual fact, it's more than 3 years now.
Yeah, I'd like to round off.
It started in 2019, around April.
Wow.
Perhaps March even. We're actually 3.5 years.
And if you've not listened to the first episode, I really implore you to do it, because it was recorded on both of our phones. The audio is shocking. And I was walking around the pool outside just having a chinwag with Leon, and that ended up being episode one, which is one of our most listened to episodes.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. Okay. Interestingly, too, though, people will quite often say to us, oh, when are you guys going to tell your story?
I know.
And, the obvious response is you might want to listen to episode one.
That's it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're back in Melbourne and sounding a little bit gravelly, mate. Tell us what's going on.
Man, yeah, well, I woke up on Monday and Qantas had sent me their obligatory your flight's delayed message. So I was like, in a way, it's a blessing in disguise, because I was busy and was struggling to pack in time, but that's all good. Got to the airport. The flight from Darwin to Sydney was fairly uneventful. Got to Sydney, had a bit of a delay. Went to the Qantas Club. That was closed. They sent me to the Qantas Business Lounge, which is very nice. Nice decor and great meal. Looked after me a treat. Got onto flight number two, and the bloke next to me coughed and spluttered the whole way down. Now, he did have a mask on, but clearly that doesn't do much. So all those people that said the masks are a waste of time, there may well be a truth to that, because now I have old mate's cold. So all that lack of travel that we had for a few years stopped all the colds and flus. But, yeah, I felt pretty average all day, I've got to say.
Right. And before we introduce our special guest for the week, we just played for everyone that was listening at the start a little bit of feedback from one of our listeners. Now, I think that's the first time a listener has actually rung in and left some feedback on Anchor.
Yeah, through the platform. I've had a couple of phone calls over the journey.
You're right.
Which I'm still reeling from. But yeah, that's the first one that came through our official platform, Anchor.
Yeah, so thank you to that listener who will remain anonymous on her request.
Yes.
But she did leave some feedback. I put that to Chris, which I think is a fair thing to do, would like to give Chris an opportunity to provide his thoughts on that. So without further ado, let me for once introduce our weekly special guest star, Mr. Christopher Walsh from Nova Scotia. Is that right, Chris?
Nova Scotia.
Yes. He's just from downtown Darwin today.
Yes, yes. All the way from Nova Scotia. Yeah. Chris Walsh from the anti-independent. I always get this mixed up, Chris, and you hammered me the last time for it, rightfully so, I should say. It's the anti-independent online newspaper. Is that the way we say it?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds good. I like that. It's good to see you both again. You know, I sometimes get too casual with you guys, I guess.
So I'd just like to elaborate on that, because when it comes to interviewing people and, you know, discussing things with them, whether it's on, you know, TV, radio, or in this case, a podcast, The idea of the host or the interviewer is to try and make the guest as comfortable as possible. Mm-hmm. So the feedback actually says that we're doing our job well, Leon.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately,
our guest is freestyling a bit too much.
Yeah. Well, I guess 2.5 years of you guys coaxing me into this false sense of safety here. No, look, I like, you know, she said it was constructive criticism. I'm not sure where the criticism is exactly. Like I think that was the whole point. Why I agreed to start doing this with you guys, and we talked about it before, was that I like kind of telling those stories, and you guys wanted to talk about the news, and I like telling the kind of behind the scenes stuff that that people don't get to read in the paper. And I think she alluded to that at one point there, but, so anytime, you know, so when we get on and we do this, that's what I like to tell you guys a little bit more than what you would find out by just reading anybody's stories. Our stories, we try to include everything we can, but there's always some color stuff kind of behind the scenes. And that whole idea, I think it's just kind of become that. I thought that was a really good strength of doing this podcast with you guys, is that a lot of people said, hey, it's just like three guys sitting in a pub and talking about things, and people really like that. And we're talking about issues. And, you know, I think it's just unusual for people sometimes, maybe, who don't see that, who don't see the difference. Like, I don't think there's ever been a show quite like this in the territory. Well, I know that for a fact, right? Like, you've got your standard, you know, ABC used to do like a panel discussion about politics and stuff. And I think to some extent mixed us. But yeah, unfortunately, you're not going to get journalists who are going to actually tell you what's really going on. And I'm not afraid to do that. And in terms of that, of providing all sides, I think that was a critique there was, we do that. The shocking thing these days is just how they don't have an argument. I mean, they don't have a side. We're exposing a lot of stuff that's gone on in the government, a lot of stuff that's gone on with police. We always put their side in there. It's just, I think it's all starting to, the people aren't buying it anymore. Like, it's not adding up. And, you know, just all of that with the, you know, we've ran that editorial a few weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago now, about how our institutions are all crumbling. The Northern Territory's broken and it's going to take a lot. Yeah. And it's going to take a lot to fix. Right. And that's just kind of the point in time where we're at. And I think it's unique that we get to explore this time period in the Northern Territory, the way that we're doing like this, where, you know, like we run the stories and we get everybody's side in all the stories. And then we can explore it a little bit further. And then we usually get into conversations about this and our own opinions about things. And that's great. Like, we got to have that. And I'm not going to stop doing that. And as, you know, as far as it goes with Jamie Chalker's feelings, I really don't care. I mean, the guy's in a position where he's going to be criticized. All these people are in these high-paying, high-profile public positions where there's going to be criticism. You know, who else files? Of course, the chief minister is going to be critical. I don't think I've gone too far with any criticism on any one of them. I think it's all been warranted, and I can back everything up that I say. You know, like you have that freedom to have an opinion, and with that comes that responsibility not to you say things that are untrue or defamatory or really hurtful in any way. Look, this is just the place that we're in. This is the time and place, the Northern Territory in 2022, where it's completely broken. And, you know, you need people to point that out, right? Because it's been said, if we don't know what the problem is, how are we going to fix the problem, right? That's what my philosophy is let's get it all out there. Let's discuss it. Let's have that public conversation. I don't think anyone should censor themselves at any time. I think you got to be careful that, like I said, you're not saying things that are defamatory or that you can't back up with facts. But we need to have that discussion. It's the only way this place is going to get fixed. And that's why I love doing the show with you guys. And I am comfortable doing it with you. And I feel like I'm comfortable with everybody. You know, we hear back from a lot of people too. And they're always happy. I know it's become a part of tradition, almost a weekly tradition for a lot of people to listen to the show, where they get this kind of inside track into what's been going on in the week and making the news and some behind the scenes stuff. So I'm glad that she's listening. I'm glad we're doing it long enough that she can mow the verge or whatever.
That's revealing her character even more though, isn't it? Because she started out being anonymous. Now we know she's female. And now we know she's from South Australia because she calls it a verge. So we're really narrowing down. Hey, Chris, well, just really quickly. Yeah. Sorry, Leon. But just on that something that struck me as I was hearing back that feedback, we'll call it, and listening to you again, is two things. One thing we've discussed, whether it's on the podcast or off, I just can't remember. But, you know, you have often said to us that you enjoy the fact that you get an opportunity to use your personality as well, which you wouldn't really normally get to do apart from the odd, you know, punt here and there when it comes to writing stories.
Yeah, analysis.
But the other thing is, what I reckon it shows up, and, you know, when you talk specifically about certain personalities, if they're government-related, part of the reason why it may feel like you're sort of doubling down on them and their inadequacies is because of the fact that they don't reply. So you can't say, well, we asked the questions and the reply was A, B, and C, which ideally you'd love to say, but because they're not replying, it is only one-sided. Mm-hmm. It's not done by design. It's just fact.
Yeah, and if we can get responses from other media that maybe they've spoken to, but yeah, you know, it's interesting. That's an interesting thing, and to the fact, as far as it goes with police, I mean, they were free to talk to us. We tried to work with them. We've always sent them questions and stuff. The fact that Chalker doesn't respond, I mean, we go out, we try and get the different perspectives here. But every story we've had has been balanced. In fact, as you know, I can tell you that right now we're going through like an audit process from a group called NewsGuard. And these guys are an international group that, as I understand, are now kind of moving into Australia. And they go in and check the health and of online news sources, and to check its credibility, its integrity, you know, that it's factual, that opinions aren't getting in the way of the news stories. And if it's opinion, it's clearly labeled opinion. So we've spoken with them, and it was funny. Like they've been making a lot of international news lately for exposing a lot of propaganda in Russia in regards to the Ukraine war. And yeah, anyway, so they're
shocked out of the States. Propaganda out of Russia.
Yeah. But look, that's what these guys do. And they go in and they audit essentially online news services to ensure that what's being reported is true and factual. And if not, and you know, and then they put out a report card. We haven't seen the report card yet, but I did talk to the woman who worked there, who had asked us a few questions about some of our things and how we do our business, and saying, you know, yeah, just clarify on the about page who is actually there, how people could contact, you know, they gave us pretty good ways to improve our transparency so that everyone knows who they're. But look, when they went through the reporting and stuff, I was surprised. I think there was one thing, and I'll raise this with you guys. There was one, and I tried to explain it to her, and I was like, oh, I wish I could send you a thing. She said, oh, it might have been that opinion slipped into one of these news articles, and it was about Chalker, incidentally. And it was about how that press conference he did after the Supreme Court verdict, not guilty verdict on Rolf. And I think it was Woody who wrote that particular story, and he had said something in a bizarre press conference where Chalker did not use the words Uendamu, Kumajai Walker, shooting, death, Supreme Court trial, murder trial, like all of what he was supposed to be talking about, he didn't actually talk about. I wrote back to her and I said, look, if you can just search around and I'll try and find a link to that. There is no other way to describe that press conference. It was bizarre by any objective measure. To have the police commissioner come out after such a big deal and not address what the big deal was about. It was unusual. So I think that she was understanding of that in that. And I said, you know, it's just, that was remarkable. That was a bizarre press conference, where he just rambled on and didn't talk about the issues. So, but look, yeah, we try to, we'll always take on that kind of, feedback and that kind of criticism. And that's why we're doing it with NewsGuard here, is we want them to have a look at us and give us a clean bill. And, you know, and as far as it goes with dealing in interpersonal relationships or whatever with them, you know, yeah, I mean, look, every journalist has an opinion, every editor has an opinion. So I'll come on here and I'll share it. But when I'm writing the stories, we keep that out unless we're doing an analysis or an opinion piece or an editorial. But then you get into these things where that starts to be difficult, right? And I won't have an issue with this, but I think we'll talk about it later. But when something comes up with what the anti-police and possibly the anti-government were involved with, which was this plot, the secret plot to have one of our stories listed as restricted content, essentially pornography, for reporting on something that happened. And this, in this case, was the sexual assault of a child, which was horrific, but the police had suppressed it. They then went and tried to get authorization from a federal agency to list our stories restricted so they could raid our office, shut us down, put out a press release that would have said, you know, three men have been arrested at a East Arm office, aged whatever our ages, charged with, you know, producing illicit content involving children, right? That starts to become a little personal, that you have to take it that they're trying to destroy my professional reputation by something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And where do I come back from that? If that had have happened, what would the consequences have been for us? I don't know. So that kind of stuff gets really scary when you see that they're taking this so personally themselves, that they're concocting these wild plots to try and take us down, to try and discredit us. But it's to attack us personally. And you just know that you're rattling them at that point, right? Like, that's where we just sit back and say, well, what we're doing is clearly getting to them. Now, why is that? Well, they don't want to report it. See, that's journalism. That's what journalism is, reporting something that somebody else doesn't want being made public. And so that's what we'll do. I think that over the past little while in the territory, we just kind of got used to not having anyone stick up for those kind of principles, and not a politician and not anybody from any political sphere, but you actually have a journalist who's going to stand up for press freedoms, number one, but for our democracy, and to do it with people, with, you know, not in a political or self-aggrandizing sense, but to actually provide journalism for people that is in the greater good that people need to know about. As we said, they don't know what the problem is. There's no way to fix it. And so we just haven't had that for so long here. I think that now we're in that position, and that's where the anti-independence kind of been thrust into, and we'll stand up for those values.
Yeah. I did applaud their creativity in that situation though, Chris, I must say.
Well, we'll talk about it in a bit. I mean, it was really, one lawyer said it was clear that whoever came up with it didn't actually understand the law at all. But
don't worry about that.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the stories. The first story this week is a settlement was reached for Red Centre Nats victims who were sprayed with burning fuel and rubber. When did this happen, Chris?
Yeah, so we'll take you back to 2017, I believe that happened. Just a horrific incident down at the Red Centre Nats. Now, what had happened was, yeah, they were sprayed with burning fuel and rubber from a car doing burnouts. Now, there was methanol fuel. One of these things had been set up with methanol fuel, one of these cars, and it had ignited at the back of the car while it was doing burnouts. The flame shot through a wire fence, which was all that stood between the burnout pad and the crowd. Like, that's just crazy. They had nothing blocking it. It was just that. And this incident happens. The flames, these people get torched. There was a doctor who at the time, later in 2018, I told the ABC that it treated the victims, said the flames would have been over 400 degrees. Now, what's happened, and this has been a long, drawn-out process, and it's interesting, and there's going to be more stories about this. And I know that David Wood is working on another one right now. Now, under the NT law, so what's happened, I guess, first is we can say that it was, what's bringing this back up now is that $3.2 million settlement was reached this week now. Between the 12 burn victims and the organizers of the event. Now, that was Car Festivals Proprietary Limited, the respondents, NT Major Events Company, and Summer Nats Proprietary Limited. There were a lot of people, 11 others in the victims group, who took the federal court action because they had been unable to sue for pain and suffering. Now, this falls under the MAC scheme because it was a vehicle.
Oh, involved. Wow.
So these people, I mean, it was negligent on the part of the organizers, no doubt. They did not plan this properly. And these people were seriously injured. But there's a cap on what could actually be paid out because it was treated like a motor vehicle accident. Now, like I said, under these NT laws, and we'll see where this kind of goes now because, yeah, anyway, I won't give away too much of the next story because people should get on and read them. We might talk about it next week. But under NT law, spectators injured by a vehicle cannot sue for negligence or seek compensation. Instead, they could only seek redress through the MAC scheme, which is the Motor Accidents Compensation Commission scheme, which only covers medical costs and average wages while people remain injured. Jeez. So, yeah, this was, so it was, I think that they got to a point where they, yeah, some lawyer come on. Now, the victims were represented by a guy named Greg Walsh, no relation, who sought orders for loss or damage based on claims. And this was like what they had to do with this. They had to figure out how we're going to do this. So he sought orders for loss or damage based on claims under the Australian consumer law and common law negligence. So the judgment of the settlement, $1 million will go towards legal costs and disbursements. $2.2 million to be distributed to the lead applicant and other group members. Don't know how that's actually going to be broken down here. We've been hearing from people that it's not going to be uniform. I guess some people get more than others. I don't know how that'll go down, but we should have more on that too. The fact that this exists now, and like I said, there'll be another story, but it is interesting that I think that there was something in this, that it was kind of, when they get the payment, there's kind of a non-disclosure. It was a gag order that they can't even complain about the fact that they couldn't sue properly for negligence and the and their own issues that, and yeah, injuries that had happened to them.
Yep.
So, the Flames, I mean, this was just a terrible case. I remember it at the time. There was no adequate physical barrier making out a clear case of negligence. The judge had ruled a range of injuries were suffered by numerous spectators, some very serious, mostly physical, but also psychological. That is a thing here that we've heard from people who say, that they haven't been the same since that.
Because they witnessed it or...
Yeah, and you got, well, you're smelling the burning flesh and everybody's running around. Yeah. I mean, Jesus, it's horrific. So, this is done now, this settlement, but there is a lot more to kind of get into here, and we'll see where this goes. But yeah, a terrible thing.
Think about those events, though, and I'm not making judgment on anyone, the spectators, the organizers, or anything like that. But, you know, historically, the way they started, it was all about people being able to get up close and personal. And I remember the original. The ones that I can remember originally were done in Canberra. And, you know, there was people sitting on the back of cars and all that sort of stuff. But in order to get these high-performance vehicles to torque the way they want to, they've got to use some pretty extreme fuels in order to do it. So it's just a bad story for everyone, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. So... I guess this goes some way to redressing the injuries that have been suffered, but I get the feeling that a lot of them are still not happy with how this went down. And there were calls at the time, too. I believe it was Terry Mills back with Territory Alliance. He was calling for this to be overhauled.
Who's that? Territory what?
Yeah. We don't remember them now, but what he was saying was that this is clearly not fair for people who get injured in incidents like this. Now, Files was asked about that. And she said, oh, no, this is completely fair. That's the way it should be. Yeah, it's just the way it is. It's fine. And it's like, I don't know about that. There's some people here who've been seriously injured who aren't getting the compensation that they deserve for negligence that went on. So, I think this needs to become an issue. I think that this needs to be pushed because, look, we're in this place here with the territory where people don't do their job properly. And we've got the ICAC investigating 300 buildings that aren't properly have a occupancy permit, but there's some serious ones.
Only 300, Chris.
So and that's varying degrees, right? But we know of some serious ones where there is serious dangers presented. I mean, what happens if something like that happens, if there's an incident inside a building that wasn't certified properly? I mean how does this go? I mean, we're just in a place where you can see some dereliction of duty leading to something bad. We're at the carnival, if you will, and we're questioning whether the carnies put the rides together properly.
Whether he's put all the bolts in.
And that's, which,
I've got to say, given what's happened in Melbourne this week in that situation, I did find it slightly inappropriate that somebody on YouTube has put together the top 10 rides at the Royal Melbourne Show in the last couple of days. I thought, oh, God. That's really bad timing for everyone.
And it is. I just say about that because I did travel around with carnies for a while, and I did write a book about it.
So. And you do look like one, so that's good too.
Yeah, I live with carnies for a while. The thing that then their argument was, and they did a good job, these guys I was with, but it's like they said that it gets moved and taken down every week, right, when they move to a different location so they can do inspections at that time to see if some parts are wearing thin or whatever. And that's safer than, let's say, the stationary rides where, like, at an amusement park where they're there and they never get moved. And then can anyone tell where the weaknesses are at that point? So that's interesting. But you hate seeing incidents like that.
You do. Yeah. I thought the carny's argument would be, if you're stupid enough to ride one of these, then... ..
Well, I think everybody has to assess everything, whether or not they're willing to risk it, whatever that might mean at the time, but definitely their personal safety.
Exactly. Anyway, look, let's move on to the next story. The ICAC's former assistant has been fined for disclosing confidential information. However, no conviction has been recorded, but it has been described as a serious breach of trust.
Yeah, this is... the executive assistant, Kate Johnson, 23. the tender age of 23. She's now no longer in that position anymore. She pleaded guilty in the Darwin local court on Monday to breaching section 145 of the ICAC Act. Now, there were criminal charges here. There was a criminal code charge of disclosing confidential information that was withdrawn. Now, that would have brought penalties, including jail time, for this breach. Now, what we know of what that is, so they dropped that. She pleaded out to the, what was it, relating to disclosing information obtained in the course of her work, but it was through the ICAC Act, so it didn't have those criminal penalties. The court heard Johnson had photographed part of a handwritten letter from an inmate at the Holtz prison to the commissioner, Michael Riches, on May 31st and posted it to social media site Snapchat, where it was viewed by more than 100 people before being deleted. The letter was understood, as we understand it, to have related to a seemingly frivolous complaint by the inmate, which a 23-year-old thought was funny and posted it up there.
Right. Okay.
Without really using any good sense there.
Yeah. Professional, do you know what it said?
Judgment. It was something about just a complaint of something that was going on at the prison that taken. It wasn't like, you know, about abuse or assault or anything serious. It was a bit frivolous complaint.
Right.
But she thought this was funny. Anyway, she was questioned by police on June 3rd when they also found a video on her phone related to the breach. The court was told it's a serious breach of trust. It's crucial that members of the public have faith that confidential communication with all government agencies will be sacrosanct. The prosecutor said, yeah, look, that's the job here. Now, she was in at this tender age of 23, had been in for a few years with the ICAC, a couple of years at least. So starting when she was 21, she had access to very important files here, right? She was the secretariat for their, basically their executive operations committee, which received reports from investigators and provided recommendations to the commissioner. So she had access to everything as the secretariat of this. And she found this one letter. She put it out there. The problem is that, you know, like the prosecution saying here, the public needs to have faith that any communication remains confidential. The defendant's actions have undermined the confidence that the public has in ICAC. Well, I think a lot has led to that. But this is another little kick in the butt here for him. And the public service in general, the sentence must serve as a reminder to public servants and to people in positions of power that they cannot abuse their position for any reasons. So the judge, David Woodruff, he did consider 29 character references for Johnson and determining the sentences, as well as assurances from her lawyer, Julie Franz, that Johnson had felt, quote, deep regret about the breach and that her actions had caused her, quote, personal loss. Her lawyer said she had resigned from her job as Riches's executive assistant after the breach. So the judge fined her $5,000 plus a $150 levy with no conviction recorded was the big one.
Is that in line with what somebody would normally get for that?
Breaching that kind of stuff. Now you think that would be a little bit more. I mean, this is like the prosecutor said, you know, the public's trust has been breached here in this. She was in a position where this material needed to remain confidential. It's about the public's trust in the ICAC. Yeah. So, yeah, I think a lot of people just hearing around town weren't happy with the fact that there was no conviction, saying, well, you know, really, what are the consequences here for what she did? She has to pay $5,000, sure, but shouldn't there be some lasting consequence here? I don't know. Look, it was a frivolous thing. It was a stupid thing. I don't think you should probably be hiring children and putting them in those kind of positions where they have access to this kind of confidential information. But again, that's my opinion. Take it for what it's worth.
What's the cutoff in your opinion?
Guys at a pub here. Well, look, it depends on the person, of course. But I remember at the time when the charges were up, and we're like, this girl, and you know, there were no professional photos of her. There were these glamour shots she had done, and I'm not making any comment on her as a woman. She can do what she wants. But we just thought at the time, like, yeah, she looks a little young to be in such a high position here where she has access to all of this stuff. And usually it would be somebody who's a little bit more mature. And
I think what you're really saying is experience, really, isn't it? You're talking about life experience.
Oh, yeah. Being mature and, having seen things. I mean, she thought clearly that there was something funny in this letter. She thought her good time social media friends would get a kick out of it. So, you know, hopefully they take this into consideration. Now, one thing that I'll add on here at the end, which I was on Facebook last night, and I saw that a piece of Territoriana, let's call it, was put up for sale. Now, there was a woman named
Territoriana
named Kate Johnson selling an iPhone 11 for $700 on the Darwin Buy Swap Sell page. And she had said something, I just bought it in May. It's hardly been used. And we see here, well, the police confiscated it in June. So there you go. I found a video on it. So anyway, I just thought, well, here, it's all gone full circle. Now she's selling the phone on social media. Anyway, look, it's a serious thing in that breach of the public's trust, like I said. And the ICAC can't afford to have any more black eyes here. And yet here's another one for them. And I don't know.
And the only question I had in relation to that is, what's the deal with so is a letter that comes from an inmate considered confidential, is it?
Well, right. Any complaint that would be sent to the commissioner is absolutely confidential. Like that stuff starts getting out, you find out who's complaining. I mean, you've got, that's very sensitive information.
Okay.
The fact she was, going through that posting it publicly. Look, I'm not sure, and I don't want to say, I'm pretty sure that the identity of that inmate was not revealed during that thing, that it was only like certain sections of the letter and not the name. Right,
just what they were saying.
Yeah, but still, like, you just can't be abusing your position like that and taking that out, so...
Fair call.
Well, on the similar theme, in fact, the same theme, Chris, your next story, the NT Police Media Unit staffer, or an NT Police Media Unit staffer, is facing court over alleged disclosure of confidential information.
Yeah, here we go again. Now, this one is alleged. That one was proven in court. This is an allegation that, I'm trying to remember when this first came out. The police, on August 11th, the NT Police Media Unit boss, Rob Cross, had issued a press release saying that following an investigation by the SRU, the Special References Unit, that a 38-year-old woman had been issued a notice to appear relating to two counts of disclosure of confidential information. And just that was all it said, really, as the matter is now before the courts. No further information will be provided, he said. Now, nowhere in that statement did they say that it was a NT police employee. We now know that, the court records have come up. It shows that it is an NT police media advisor whose name is Chelsea Rogers. She's based in Alice Springs, was responsible for managing police media releases on crime and other police service matters in the southern region. She is now charged with disclosing confidential information and unlawfully accessing data to gain benefit. So once you get into that gaining benefit stuff, that's pretty serious stuff.
Yeah.
Again, this is alleged at this point. We'll see court records show, two counts of the disclosure of confidential information and two counts of unlawfully accessing data. Next hearing is October 3rd. They just did not say that it was somebody in police at the time, which I guess according to their transparency guidelines, they really only have to if this is their guidelines, if it's a serving police officer. She would not be a serving police officer. She's a media officer, I guess, whatever you want to call it.
It'd be a busy job, that, wouldn't it? Media officer in the southern part of the Northern Territory.
Oh, God, yeah, and Alice Springs and all that.
Yeah,
And, they're getting hammered down there for not really reporting everything. which is seems right. to be a theme amongst the anti police.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that's we'll see where that one goes. That's again some pretty serious allegations being made there, but we don't know what the story is either. This is another one of those.
Yeah, yeah. It'll unfold.
Yeah, and we'll see in court. So, see what happens.
All right. Look, let's head to another part of the territory now, to Tennant Creek, and the mayor was caught using a council car while allegedly driving on drugs, according to sources. It's a bit of a worry.
Well, I think, did we get to talk about this last week? I think we touched on it.
We didn't, and your original headline said something along the lines of mayor caught with drugs in car or something. I thought, geez, what's Diamond Con been up to now? But then, different mayor.
I think a lot of people thought that. I don't know why everyone's mind went to Con. Maybe because it's the biggest city. Maybe
I felt like you intentionally left out the bit that would have steered us in the right direction.
Well, I think it was in the lead, but then to read the whole story. But anyway, it was when we revealed this, it was Barkley Regional Council Mayor Jeff McLaughlin. Now, he was pulled over on Monday morning for alleged drug driving in Tennant Creek. His vehicle was stopped about 10:15 a.m. This was in the original story. Police alleged he returned a positive roadside test result for cannabis. They later found a number of cannabis plants and material at a Tennant Creek residence, but did not specify if it was his house. The next day, police said the man had been charged with driving under the influence of drugs, supplying less than a commercial quantity of a Schedule II drug, possessing less than a trafficable quantity of a Schedule II drug, and cultivating less than a trafficable quantity of a prohibited plant. Now, that is not to say that it's all cannabis-related. There may very well be other narcotics included in this. And
is that a prohibited plant?
Yeah, we don't know it was under the influence of drugs. They said charged with driving under the influence of drugs. We don't know what's alleged. Again, it's still alleged, so we don't know exactly. But here's what we do know, that he was driving a council car at the time, and that he's now taken what he called personal leave, which, would see him. So, and I'm not sure what happened today. Thursday afternoon, I think they had a meeting in the Barkley Council where they had to vote on whether or not they were going to grant him this leave. Now,
impeach?
Well, I guess he's still got to go through the whole court process. It's all allegations at this point, but they're expected to vote on whether or not, so that this leave that he's asking or seeking would see him continue to drive the car.
Oh, was she going to ask that? Is he allowed to take the car and leave?
And continue to collect his taxpayer-funded allowance while he awaits the court appearance to answer to the charges. Now, there is a lot of people in the NT government who will tell you, or any even private companies, if I'm busted with drugs, the car's in a company car. See you later.
That's gone.
Yeah, that's not how this goes. But
different rules for mayors, are they?
Well, that seems to be what's going on. So I'm not sure exactly what happened and where that, if they approved that leave the way he wanted it. I would imagine, I think a few people, because we heard from a few people, of course, after the story ran. So I'm sure that those people probably made their opinions known. People from Tennant Creek, from the Barkley region, to council about what they think is, the public's expectations on something like this. And that doesn't really meet it when, you get busted.
The council minibuses rented out to the mayor for a couple of weeks.
So anyway, we'll see. There's going to be more on that. And of course, I think the ABC last week had a whole, a very long, a complex story about a lot of issues going on at Barkley Council, a lot of issues about bullying and harassment. And this looks pretty dysfunctional. I think some people were talking about it, possibly being sent to the local government minister, whether or not he, disbands them, as we saw in Palmerston years ago.
Who's the local government minister?
I think that would be Chansey these days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's read that ruthless. Brief, that ministerial brief.
So, they got
to leave it up to the public servants to sort out.
So what they said, and this was the chief executive here at council. I'm trying to find her name. Anyway, she had put out a statement saying, "Oh, this is all just personal stuff." Emma Bradbury said she and council were aware of the matter. "These are matters that are private to the mayor," she said. "Well, not when he's driving public cars. The charges are a private matter and unrelated to his role as mayor, so it is inappropriate for council or councillors to comment on the matter." Well, it is connected to his role as mayor if he's up performing duties in the car that day. So, yeah, there's going to be, I'm pretty sure, a lot more to come out on this before this is done. And, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yep, yeah, very cool.
Just a weird one.
Right. Well, mate, moving on to the public service, the Northern Territory Health Boss appointed new Department of Chief Minister and Cabinet CEO.
Yeah, that's a surprise one, isn't it? We saw this in the NT News today, and they chose a different kind of tact. You're talking about headlines possibly being deceiving. Well, or not telling the whole story. Theirs was Health Boss resigns, hunt for replacement starts.
Ah, right.
Find out what his next move is. And it's like, no, guys. Like, the story here is that they filled the role of head public servant. And who they filled it with was this guy, Frank Daly. Now, he'll take over for Jody Ryan, and everyone's missing her, I'm sure. Good friend of the NT Independent, Jody Ryan. Yeah, she left a week after Gunner, and that kind of another shock resignation. So they've now taken time. They've had Kathleen Robinson in the interim. I've heard good things about her, which might be why she's not got the job full time. I don't know. So, look, I don't have a lot of faith in any of this stuff. And we know that there are certainly some issues. You know, I'm surprised that Sean Drabsch didn't put his hand up for this one. He's my pick. I'm surprised he didn't get a look in here. But maybe he's got a sweet gig over in business. Anyway, yeah, this Frank Daly now files it said, they just announced this, of course, this morning, that Dr. Daly, of course, he's a doctor, medical doctor, had been appointed NT Health CEO in May 2021. That he had more than 30 years of executive experience in both public and private sector roles, including more than 10 years in senior executive roles in the Australian Public Service. She said Dr. Daly came into the new chief minister and cabinet chief executive role following an extensive recruitment process. They do have somebody filling in now for him and as the health CEO. While they do select that is part of the story. They are going to have to now find a new chief executive for health. Now, his time and very short time has not been without controversy in health. So we're talking May 2021. He comes in. There are some controversies. One, of course, was when the AMA NT president, Robert Parker, went on ABC radio. And you guys probably remember that, where he said, look, they're sacking everybody. They're sacking the senior heads of departments of the hospitals. And what he said was to punish the medical staff for what they perceive as a significant failure. The government, that being that the increased pressure on services in the emergency department and double bunking of patients. We know that all those code browns, was it code brown? Code yellow at the hospital? I'm getting mixed up.
The code browns what they have at the swimming pool, Chris.
No, yeah, well, that's true. But there is a code brown, but I'm trying to remember what the codes were at the hospital where we've had some like five of those.
Code yellow? From
code yellow, yeah. I think that's the code yellow. The code brown had to do with the supplies, I think. They had to order code brown when that fire at the medical supplies place. So anyway, look, he's had to deal with that too. He's had to deal with, serious issues in health. And that was one that was heavily criticized about how that would all go down if they were being sacked, if they weren't. There were other key areas of concern he had raised in a department email to staff about nepotism and conflicts of interest being rife in procurement, but of course did not say what led to that investigation that he said was going on, or told the public what happened as a result of those investigations into these issues, where he said there were problems managing conflicts of interest in recruitment of family and friends and in procurement. I think
good on him for recognizing those things exist.
Yeah. So problems. He did One Christmas, I guess it would be, right? One Christmas there. And he threatened to fire everybody on Christmas Day. So
Scrooge McDuck.
What he did was he sent an email to staff informing them that they would be sacked on Christmas Day if they were not double vaccinated. He then issued, and that, you know, that's their policy, I guess, and everyone was playing along. Well, most were anyway. But he also, this is the weird part, he issued a gag order that they must not discuss the issue with their work colleagues to safeguard the integrity of the process. Any matters which are subject to the process and remain confidential. Consequently, you are directed not to discuss this with your work colleagues other than your union or support person. And I remember we ran a story on that at the time, and people were not happy about that, the gag order part. Like, yeah, let's talk about it at the very least. Anyway, and then, you know, years ago in WA, of course, some controversy there. The media reported a review of staff morale at Princess Margaret Hospital found a fundamental failure of leadership, with staff feeling a sense of chaos and a fear of speaking out. The ABC reported the review's findings were released by the WA government soon after the resignation of Frank Daly, who was the head of WA's Child and Adolescent Health Service. At the time, the AMA WA president said Daly's position had been made very difficult with the report's findings. There was fairly direct criticism of the executive team and how they've run the institution, he said. Daly had reportedly said in an email to staff there he was stepping down to pursue other opportunities in WA and had recognized it had, quote, been a tough time for all staff. So, So he's made some friends in WA.
That's somebody in a very senior role recognizing there's a problem and stepping down. Wow, that's a... Yeah, interesting concept, Chris.
Yeah, that's he's not going to float that in the NT.
But that was in WA, in fairness.
Somebody said, and you know, to be fair, today we do have people who look on the bright side of things. And somebody said today, look, I think this guy's going to be perfect in DCM. He's going to be busy, they said, but he's he fired all the heads of staff, heads of the departments at the hospitals. So if he was to go through DCM and C, as they call it, chief minister and cabinet, he'll find a lot of people that could very easily be sacked who are pulling their weight around there and make a lot of cuts and actually do something good here. And if he's inclined to do that, he's going to find a lot of people to sack in DCM and C, I'm told.
And what a great title for him too, DCM, Don't Come Monday.
Yep. So anyway, yeah, and then we got to remember some of Jody Ryan's greatest hits here in the story, just recalling her and all of her greatness. She, of course, is over at Power and Water now on the board.
Oh, yeah.
Power and Water, yeah. So she's landed on her feet and... we don't know anything about investigation, so we'll just see. I'm sure we'll hear from her again. And in the meantime, we've got a new head public servant in the Northern Territory.
Okay. Well, let's keep us abreast of what's happening in that department, Chris.
No doubt. Absolutely.
Things to talk about. Speaking of the Chief Minister, teachers have blasted the Chief Minister and the government, of course, with the no vote on the wage freeze offer. What's happened?
Yeah, well, the latest, hey? We know this has gone on for a while. A couple of strike actions in August and September. Or was it July and August? Anyway, they have had two strike actions, one in Darwin, one clear across the NT. So what the union's saying here is that the government isn't really negotiating or bargaining in good faith, that they've kind of cut the union out. And they put it to teachers directly, apparently, the latest offer, which was not much different than the other offer. I mean, the government's just not budging on the pay freeze offer. So it went to the rank and file of teachers and education staff, and they came back 86% against it. That vote included 1,500 people, or two-thirds of all the teachers and staff covered by the EBA offer. So the thing here now, I guess, is what they're saying is that the government should start negotiating with teachers about a new agreement and actually make some movement on that in good faith, or risk an exodus of educators from the top end, and clear across the NT. The AEUNT president, Michelle Ayers, was on ABC on Tuesday and said that the teacher shortage gripping the entire country could be exacerbated in the NT with the government refusing to enter into meaningful negotiations, which could ultimately lead to not enough teachers left to staff all the government schools. She's saying that, look, if you don't increase the salaries here, there'll be nothing to attract new teachers or prevent those here from leaving. The government have to turn around, she said, and offer money or incentives to get people here, which is above and beyond what they are doing right now to keep them here. And I think that's always kind of been the concern, is that is there enough to keep teachers here, or are they going to go interstate? And it's always been, you get more money up here. The government doesn't that's have right. that money. We know they don't have the money. So, this is all working towards some sort of big collision here, and it's going to be a mess.
So easily fixable, Chris. So easily fixable. Teachers, if you're listening and you want to fix this, just vote the CLP in. That's all you need to do. They're all over it like a rash. They're getting rid of the freeze, the illegal freeze, I think they call it.
Oh, I know. Well, they put out some releases this week that sounded like labor press releases, like that they're the ones supporting, a fair wage for teachers. And that, the cost of living's going up. They need a fair wage. Well, look what they said.
And they're going to reduce petrol prices too. Don't forget that.
Yeah. Well, so they had their education spokeswoman, CLP, Joe Hersey, said if the Files government hadn't wasted millions of dollars on pet projects and roads to nowhere, they would have the money to scrap the pay freeze. They must be shaking their heads in shame, knowing they've wasted taxpayer money when they could have been paying teachers, making territory teachers the best paid in the country. But now they are here counting pennies, pretending everything's okay. Teachers deserve to have the opportunity to sit down with the government and negotiate in good faith. And Ayers had said that the government's lack of action on negotiating proper EBA would have detrimental effects moving forward. They could find a job outside the territory or elsewhere and be paid much better and be closer to true amenities and cheaper housing while being closer to families and friends. Government must keep schools open.
Yeah.
AEUNT said the government doesn't want to have to close schools or run schools with less staff than they currently are. But they're saying, look, this is the point that they're at. They'll continue to take industrial action. I don't see this ending anytime soon.
Doesn't sound like it. The only thing, too, about that comment from the illustrious CLP education spokesperson is, do we really want to be making the Northern Territory teachers the best paid teachers in the country? Because if you look at the results around the country, it doesn't indicate that they're the best performing.
Well, there are so many challenges to that, aren't there,
Pete? Of course.
When you're putting the averages in, I guess they have to do whatever it is they have to do to attract. I think that attraction. And they're saying, look, nationally now it's an issue, and that there's a teacher shortage. So how are you going to keep them here? So, I get your point about not maybe being having to be paid the most, but what other things could they do? You remember there was like housing in Catherine. Remember that?
And, yes.
They pulled that on the teachers. They were not happy about that. I don't know how that ended up. I assume they still have teachers in Catherine. There were a lot of people upset about that who said they were leaving and wouldn't come back. So, that's what the government seems like it should be doing, is trying to find some maybe innovative approaches to attract people. And what else can they offer, right? But we don't seem to be coming from that perspective with this government. They're no, we got to be the tough guys now, and we're not going to spend any more money. All of a sudden, all of a sudden, this Labor government has closed the purse strings for the first time ever. But
Don't get too confident about that, Chris. It might just be in this one area. But, I do love the road to nowhere comment. I think that's just, they can milk that till the cows come home. But it does
seem weird. And the shadeless shade structure. They should have said that too. They missed that one.
That's exactly right. It does seem a bit weird that you got Labor at loggerheads with the unions and the CLP are butting up to them like best mates.
Yeah, yeah. They were at the rally, the last teacher union rally. The CLP were talking.
Were they? Was, had the orange shirts out?
Yeah, that was bizarre. But anyway, that's politics in the NT these days.
That sure is.
It's a crazy place.
I was just going to say, look, the next one's an interesting one there, Chris. Darwin Airport is charging a temporary security surcharge for increased patrols.
Yeah, this it was like a tricky one. Like somebody had sent us this, and what they were looking at, it was like a link somebody sent to a national, international like website about Darwin Airport. And I've read through the story and I'm like, this doesn't even make sense. They were saying, oh, increased security. And I thought, oh, it was like airport security, like for arrivals, like, you know, federal officers or something. And then I saw it was this, and then we saw they're charging something called the temporary security surcharge. So basically what this is now is that they have acknowledged, airport officials have acknowledged that a spate of vehicle thefts and damage to cars at the airport. So thefts of vehicles. So people are parking there, flying wherever, and they're coming back and the car's gone. They've been stolen, they're coming back and the windows are all smashed in and the doors dented. So the airport now has said, okay, well, we got a problem. We got to start, we're going to increase patrols, and we're going to increase it with more foot vehicle and dog patrols, as well as an expansion of the airport CCTV. Now, to do all this, they're saying these increased security patrols for parked cars at the airport, they will need to institute a $2 temporary security surcharge that they say will end, will be removed should crime levels dissipate.
that's a permanent temporary.
yeah. I don't know who's going to declare that the crime rate's now gone below a level. We're going to give everybody their $2 back. We'll take $2 off your parking. Yeah, that's not going to happen. And it's going to go up to $4 probably pretty soon.
Once they need to get assault rifles.
I know we've got we do know that we have some people working at the Darwin International Airport that like listening to this podcast, Chris. So here's your opportunity to ask them to reconsider this.
But then
rather than putting the tax on the car parking, put an extra tax on the burgers that they're selling that are killing everyone.
Do they have good burgers there? Where are the burgers?
Well, there's a Hungry Jack's.
Hungry.
Yeah. I'd say they're good burgers, but it's anything fast food. Fast food tax on instead.
Well, here's the part that I don't understand. Like, this is like a federal, you know, this is federal jurisdiction stuff. You're talking an airport. Like, this is an international airport. Like, this is serious stuff. Yeah. They can do their. They could shoot the kids smashing the cars. I mean, they could do a lot of stuff. Saying, hey, this is federal. This is your you know, trespassing on federal property here. There's all kinds of, I think, measures. I don't want to see them shooting kids. I'm exaggerating that. But surely there's some ways to crack down pretty hard on anybody interfering with machines on a federal airport ground. I mean, look, I don't know what this is going to do now, but we'll see. More foot vehicle and dog patrols. So
the federal police office literally overlooks the car park. They can put their weapons out the window if they want to.
Make people clear. Don't screw around on federal property here at the airport. Yeah.
The other thing they could do is do better lighting.
Yeah.
It's pretty dark there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, this happens at every other airport in the world. But anyway.
Yeah, it's true. Very true. All right. Let's move to the next story. And the NT police secretly tried to raid the NT Independent Office for its reporting, which has been condemned by a National Journalists Union. Tell us about this, Chris.
Yeah, and just to be clear there, our reporting has been commended by that same journalist union, but the police tactics, of course, are being condemned. And as well they should. This was a bizarre story that I was tipped off about. Somebody called me, said that they had seen that the NT Independent had been mentioned in a something called the Australian Classification Board. They put some decisions that they had made online. And yeah, somebody saw that and said, oh, were you aware that the Australian Classification Board had somehow been involved with something that the NT Independent wrote, that they were reviewing something? I said, no, they didn't tell me. And then, you know, the more I found out about it, it looked like, and I said to this person as well, I said, wait, okay, so, and we know the classification board rates, you know, movies, video games, you know, and making it restricted content. And so at first, and I thought, oh, I said, geez, you know, I said, how bad is that, eh? Like the NT police would try and censor us for reporting on something that the public had a right to know about that they suppressed from telling the public. And now they're trying to censor us for it. And I thought, oh, I'm going to do a story about this. So I started looking into this. And as it turns out, it was far worse than that, far worse than that. So I went to the classification board and I said, you know, guys, we weren't made aware of any complaint. At this point, I thought it was a complaint. It isn't. It was an application that was made by the police. And that application was to have the classification board, which I guess does do publications, but it's more like magazines and pornographic material. The application was to make one of our stories restricted content. And I said, okay, so that's the censor though. But when I get the questions back, what they told me is that law enforcement agencies do this routinely and that they don't have to give an explanation for why they want something rated restricted. I thought it was, I just was like, okay, so I'm reading the response there and they said, applicants for classification, including law enforcement applicants, are not required to provide a reason when submitting material for classification. So this information is not captured in classification records. They, in May, on 17th of May, 2021, so a year and a half ago here, the classification board classified the article in question, which was ours, as unrestricted. Now, this is the line that really got me here, was state and territory classification legislation regulates how classified publications can be delivered or sold and prescribe penalties for breaches, right? So I'm like, okay, penalties. And there was some other line that they said, it's for background. And it was like, this, you know, if something is found, basically if something is found, content to be found that's classified restricted, it goes back to local law enforcement agencies to then enforce penalties under the state and territory, act into this. So this, in this case, it was the NT's act, what is it called? The Classification of Publications, Films, and Computer Games Act, NT 1985. Now, what that act says is that, you know, you're found to have been producing or publishing restricted content comes with penalties. There are penalty units. So I think it was up to 2 years jail for what ours would have fallen under, but that was unclear, but certainly there was jail time. The act says this, and I read the whole thing, and you get through it, and I checked with some legal friends and said, you know, and lawyers and said, you know, is this, am I reading this right? And they're like, there's no other way to read this. And this is from the act. A police officer may enter on land or on or into premises and may search for and seize a thing that the officer believes on reasonable grounds to be connected with an offense against this act that is found on the land or on or in the premises. So this is clearly what they were doing. They were going to get us classified as restricted content. They were then going to, under the act, raid us, seize our computers, possibly execute arrests on us for publishing this material, which is very much in the public interest. And we get back to that. This was about the horrifying sexual assault of a toddler who was playing in their front yard. You guys remember that story and the man walking down the street, which horrified me. And I thought the public needs to know this because they need to know that their kids can no longer even play in a fenced-in front yard without being supervised. Like that was so horrific what happened to that child. And they hadn't reported it. They just, 3 days had gone by the time I heard of it. And so I ran the story, and then they were on the back foot the whole time. And then that led to another story about the guy who, we started getting all of these stories and about suppressed sex crimes. You had a guy who had a mask, was dressed in black, had a rape kit. The police had called it, or legal people call it, a rape kit outside a small child's bedroom. Police didn't tell anybody about that. He was a registered sex offender. He had been in the room with the girl who was there. And if you guys remember that story, the father, one night, he'd been in there three times. The father one night went to check on her, and he was hiding behind the door.
Yes.
Like, it was, and the video, and then they found videos of what he had done to the, it was just awful. And then you had, we had stories from Darwin, Palmerston, down to Alice Springs and back, of sexual assaults that just were not being reported by the public or by the police. They just were not being made public, so people didn't know. We had a woman in Alice Springs who was penetrated while she was asleep in her bed that they just weren't telling people about. It led to this investigative series that we did, that we ultimately won the NT Media Award for last year for best crime reporting. For this series of stories that started with this incident that had happened in the front yard. So now we know that the police at that time, instead of trying to work with us, try to work with other media, try to get as much information to the public as they could. And I remember we wrote a very strong editorial about how they still don't get this, because they were still coming out at one point. We thought by the end, after the months had gone by, that they had, but clearly they hadn't. And they're trying now to get us listed as producing restricted content. Of course, it's crazy because we didn't create this story. This story happened. They suppressed it. We reported it, but it was factual account of what happened. So they go to classification board. These people aren't idiots. And I feel for these people that their time are wasted and they have to watch probably horrific things from time to time. And they're like, okay, well, let's deal with this one. The NT police, you know, they're saying this is pretty serious. Let's have a look. And they must have just been laughed at. And it was rejected, it appears, very quickly. That it wasn't that they've listed it as unrestricted content, which means it's fine, as anybody would know by reading the story. I mean, look, the story, I won't apologize for that. It's graphic to the point that it just describes what happened, and it's not overly graphic, I'll say that. But I'm not sugarcoating it either in that first story, because I needed parents to understand that this is how easily something like this could happen, and this is horrific. This is so anyway, I stand by that. And you know, in no time did they even contact us to complain, right? I think they went and wrote an editorial a letter to the editor at the NT News to complain about us. Like, it was ridiculous. We're saying, guys, we'll work with you, but you know, you got to work with the public. You got to work for the public. You got to start telling them about this stuff and what's going on in their community, because they have a right to know this. Anyway, so I'm just blown away by the fact that they would be this stupid and to then think, oh, well, we'll fix them or go raid their offices. And it's a backdoor way through it, right? Like, we have journalistic shield protection laws in the NT, so they can come and raid me, but they can if they get me producing restricted content. So that's what they tried to do, because they knew that they couldn't do it any other way. And they were rejected and they failed, as they usually do when they come up with these kind of schemes. So anyway, we now know about it. We sent it to the MEAA, as I told you, I talked to some lawyers here, sent it to the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance. They ran it by their lawyers. They, of course, too, came back saying there's no other way to interpret this. This is exactly what they were doing. They then put out a statement. They said that this whole, that it was appalling behavior and designed to intimidate the press. The NT police appear to have sought powers that would allow them to prosecute NT Independent for that publication's factual award-winning reporting about police suppressing information, said the MEAA media director Adam Portelli. This appalling overreach by NT police is designed to intimidate the media and restrict publication of stories that matter. This is an extremely disturbing development that represents a dangerous pattern of behavior in the Northern Territory. And we know all about that, starting with the government. And I'm still not convinced the government wasn't in on this or aware of this. There was something in the act about gazetting things. It was very complicated there. but it gave me the impression that the minister, the police minister, may well have been aware of this. I sent questions to all of them and nobody responded. The MEAA again then used the opportunity to call on the NT government again to lift its illegal and ongoing ban on us. There is no place in open and transparent government for politicians and public servants to hide from legitimate scrutiny of their activities, Portelli said. The previous and the current chief ministers have locked out the NT independent from reporting matters that are in the public interest. We call on the government and NT police to respect the rights of journalists and to cease impeding the public's right to know what our governments and their agencies do in our name. Yet here we are still doing this 2.5 years later. Yeah. And I just don't know. But this is just taking it too far in my mind that they would actually try this to arrest us. And yeah, like I said earlier in this podcast, to put out some sort of statement saying we're producing illicit content that was clearly designed to attack our professional reputations and attack us personally. So put us on Chris, a list or something. I don't know what they were trying to do with this nonsense.
In breaking news, I believe they've just recently retained the Wile E. Coyote and the Acme company to make sure they get you in the end.
We laugh about that, but that's kind of what this is, kind of becoming cartoonish.
It's almost got that feel to it, doesn't it?
And that's what we've heard, you know. The police aren't going to stop until they get you guys doing something. I mean, what are you going to get us for now? I'm facing, I think, this and the other one where I reported facts involving the inquest. I think I'm up now for 4.5 year jail sentence for reporting facts, by the way. I'm going to have to add that. Nobody's even accused me of reporting anything wrong. It's just, we don't like that stuff and we can get you under this section of this.
We don't like the facts.
Yeah. So look, it got to the point, guys, and we haven't reported this today. It'll be up on social media in the morning here. But let me just find this. The international. This is making international news, by the way.
Is it?
This conduct. Now the let me see.
A lot of the bigger.
The International Federation of Journalists have. They've come out now. They've issued a statement today on the NT police trying to raid our office. They said condemning the NT police and the NT government for their attempts to intimidate the NT independent with a plot to raid and arrest, which the IFJ, that is the International Federation of Journalists, said was deeply concerning and constitute an alarming infringement of press freedom. So, they've done a story here on their site. That's the International Federation of Journalists, dated 28th of September. Australia police seek authorization to raid NT independent office. Just goes through the facts of everything that we've just discussed. And then at the end, that's their line. Their statement or their comment is the NT police's attempts to preclude journalists from reporting on matters in the public interest are deeply concerning and constitute an alarming infringement of press freedoms. The IFJ urges the region's authorities to ensure that all journalists and media workers are free to work without fear of harassment, intimidation, or reprisal. This is out of the IFJ Asia Pacific office. Now, the IFJ represents more than 600,000 journalists in 140 countries.
God.
They're taken out of this. And that's how serious this is. So
I know, but Chris, you know, you had the ICJ, that's the International Court of Justice, but you had those guys out of New York last time, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The press.
That issued a statement.
Yeah, these guys are out of Brussels, apparently. This one,
right? So you've had New York, now you've got Brussels. In between, we've had the Senate of the Australian Parliament. I mean, this is the thing that I just don't get. These people must live under a rock when it comes to dealing with these type of issues.
Northern Territory is bigger than all these things.
Yeah,
renegade state.
It's just shameful, Chris. Yeah. Just utterly shameful. You know, in any other grown-up jurisdiction, you would have a politician come out and make a statement about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
well, therein lies the problem, Leon. You said grown up jurisdiction.
Well, that's, and that's right. You know, and that's why I find it so deeply difficult to respect our politicians here, because, you know, I look at them and I look at their background and what their qualifications are before they got into politics. And then I ask myself, you know what? Are you really properly qualified to do what you're doing? And then I default to this, well, it's because you're part of this cult. Whether it's the CLP or whether it's Labour, they're all cults. You know, once you're in, it's barrack for your team no matter what happens, and you forget and lose sight of what you're really there to do, and that is to govern for the people and understand what governing is. I don't even know what to say anymore, Chris. I listen to these things and I just don't know what to say.
I don't either, Leon, and I... Yeah, and like I said, when you've got international groups doing this too, they're hurting the territory's reputation by carrying on in this fashion. And really, though, what is their defense to any of this? It's more harm for them than good. I still report on everything. They just sometimes don't get to have their say on it. And how is that helping them? Any? Like, I guess the idea was that they would block us out and therefore we couldn't report on anything. But yet somehow we found a way around that. Yeah. I told you, we've got so many people who do support us in government that we get stuff leaked to us all the time. Yeah. And
that, you know, certainly hasn't worked.
Yeah,
I would go back and say to you, so if that's the case, and look, let's forget about the current chief minister for a second.
Who we've appealed to.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. But let's go back to the former chief minister. And I mean, do you think that he would be walking around with his head held high over what he's done initially to the anti-independent and keeping that ban alive? Is that the end game?
I don't think he even considers it, Pete, to be honest. Right. Like, you know, when I saw him on the airplane that day, he started talking to me as if nothing had happened. Like, he hadn't banned us. Right. He hadn't banned the free press, right? Like, he's just... He has no idea about the consequences of what he had done. He just didn't want us there. I mean, look, that's a long story about their personal issues with me and about, you know, my reporting, I guess, their professional issues with me, my reporting at the NT News and ABC. And how wouldn't it just be easy if we got rid of Chris Welsh and then, oh, somehow Chris Welsh isn't working at those places anymore. And then Chris Welsh shows up another place and then we just won't let him at the press conferences now. And what grounds are you doing that? Well, it's the ownership of this online publication that you're working for. Well, I mean, that was just laughed. That excuse was so ridiculous. Like, you know, Marcus Strom, the previous president of MEAA, who had said, wait till they find out who owns the NT News.
Yeah.
<That's right. laughs> they got a problem with ownership here. So, like, no, it's just stupidity. It's just a petty vindictiveness here And I guess part of that was that they didn't want that me questioning them and that scrutiny, as they're saying here, that we should be able, that all politicians have to be scrutinized and they don't get to pick and choose who does that. I'm qualified to do it. I've been doing it for over 20 years, so I'm going to keep doing it. But then when you get into this thing where they're hatching secret plots to circumvent laws, you know, to find loopholes through other federal laws to come in and get us, that's just taking it way too far. And I don't know what we do about that. I mean, we're going to be filing complaints with statutory authorities. I think that was in the story. But I mean, really, I mean, when are we going to take it to the ICAG? I mean, what's he going to do, really? I mean, you know, I don't have a lot of faith there anymore. The ombudsman, probably. They have some oversight of police. So they'll be getting a letter. But this kind of stuff, like, you got to call it out when it happens. And that's why I thought this is so important to do this story. And I'm glad that, you know, that other people internationally are picking up on it. I think some people nationally have as well. I think there'll be more on this from other outlets. ABC had MEAA on. They had some stories about it on the Tuesday morning from what the MEAA said in an interview on Monday. So, you know, I guess, and I think somebody had said that during the week, but where's the rest of the NT media to get behind this? So, and let's end this thing. I don't know. I'm trying. I don't know. I did try.
They're calling you out at the only press conference you are allowed to turn up to.
Well, it's like the NT News is like the biggest or something, and everyone's afraid of them, and they don't want to help us because we're killing them in reads. Like we're beating them. We know that for a lot of stories, and so we're competition to them. So they don't want to help us at all.
ABC, I don't think that's quite right, though. I mean, the NT News has run a piece on it,
but they only did that for their own self interest.
Well, I wrote a. Did I write? I think I wrote a piece on it, didn't I? I feel like I did.
You anyway. Might have. Yeah, yeah. There might have been an opinion piece, but
right,
the paper hasn't thrown its support behind us.
I have spoken to the NT News about it. I mean, we had Cam on the podcast as well. At Point Blank, asked him about this issue, and you know, whatever you think about him, he was.
I like
he
that.
Was Yeah, well, he was about, you know.
Do you remember what he said?
Very supportive. What did he say again, Chris?
He said, we don't want to be there anyway.
Yes, you really don't want to be there anyway.
Right, that's right. That's Cam, isn't it? That's Cam to a T.
Yeah,
because it's really not funny in the end, because what we're talking about is a bigger, more important principle than whether or not I feel like getting in the car and driving somewhere. It's about there are days when I want to be there and ask questions, because I know nobody else is going to ask those questions. Anyway, look, I'm not talking about the fact we don't need the NT Independent, but it would be good if everybody just, or the NT News, sorry, we aren't really independent. We don't need the NT News' support, but it would be good if, you know, we do have a press club. If everybody just come together and say, you know, all they had to do once was say, we're not going to go to your press conference unless the NT Independent's allowed. Everybody say that.
But you know what, Chris? I think the government would be happy about that. Because just the way they've reacted to date, I think they would go, oh, great, we've got a holiday. Now we can go and do something else.
Well, I guess the NT News would have to go a step further and say, we're not going to just publish your unquestioned press releases. then they're getting into their own, they're hurting their own income. Right. Yeah. Because that's what they get paid by the government to do, is to report these puff pieces when they're given them. So, you know, it's just a corrupted system. And we get back to where we started here in this podcast is, sorry, I'm telling these truths. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry if some people don't like it, but that's where we live. That is the seriousness of the situation of the Northern Territory.
It is serious. It's deeply troubling. I feel like I'm living in the twilight zone here, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I just do not understand why this is not an important issue to government. And, you know, I don't understand it. It's very disturbing, very troubling, and very sad. But
and they just keep getting away with it. So,
well, you know, and that's why we do this podcast, Chris. You know, I've sent this to you many times. I mean, we started this podcast with Territory Story, and we still do that, and we still enjoy doing that very much. But you know, we've got Weekends with Walshy happening, and there's really only one reason for it. I've said it many times before, and that is, I want to make sure that you have a voice that is there beyond what you do yourself.
Yeah, and we appreciate it, and that's why I've enjoyed doing this. And we get to, like I said, we get to discuss this and have that discussion, and talking about it is so important. Talking about everything that's going on here.
Yeah.
Do this every week.
Talking about things, there's been absolutely nothing in the paper, your paper at least, this week in relation to the inquest. But I am reading on other wires that there's a lot of stuff going down, including today. Freckleton is apparently not going to be supporting any racist cops.
There'll be some stuff on that. That was interesting. Now, look, I've said this before, and I need to explain this. We don't have the resources. I'm not sending a reporter now. I don't have a reporter to send to Alice Springs like the ABC and the NT News both do. And other publications who have reporters who can sit and do that all day. We just can't do that. But we have, you know, it is on in the office, and when things come up that are important, we'll certainly cover it. The other thing that's interesting about that, so what had happened with Freckleton today, he told people yesterday, he told the cops who were in those messages with Zach Rolfe that, we're not representing you anymore. You go get your own representation now. This isn't a petty or vindictive thing at all. It's crazy. So then they're saying, then the NTPA lawyer got up today. I was reading the transcript because I did not have time today. I was in and out of the office, but I was reading the transcript late today. And the NTPA lawyer got up and said, well, look, these people need to be protected. These officers, they need to know when they come in here that legally they're okay. And she said, look, you know, just because the timing and everything of this, and she said, we respect that. The schedule and the timing, but we need some time here, and we can't let you know, fair process get thrown out the window because you want to keep timelines, Peggy Dwyer. And it was an interesting argument. And the judge said, okay, well, I think they're already having this week as a break, this next week coming up. So they'll have until next Friday to enter submissions, these other officers who were caught up in these messages. And we've talked about that. The other thing here, and Leon, I don't know if you cut this out if you need to, but you know, I'm at the point, you were just talking about being in like Twilight Zone stuff, right? And I'm at the point where I'm going to start being critical of this inquest because I'm not a law officer and I think we have a right to criticize. But what I saw today, I just could not believe it. We'll have something about it. But Dwyer got up. There are issues here that we know about. And they came up that Zach Rolfe didn't want coming out. And whatever, look, but there are issues here, and we've reported on some of them already, but, you know, the text messages were one. This has all come out today, what I'm saying, so that's all out there. Also, that he was deceptive in his application to the anti-police, which we know about, and then questions about the recruitment process overall with the anti-police, which I'm heartened to see. That's like one of the first big ones where it's like, oh, you're finally taking a holistic approach instead of this very narrow narrative that it's all a bunch of racists. It's systemic racism. We know that from every other coronial report ever produced in the Northern Territory that involves a cop and a death. It always comes back to it's systemic racism. We know that. They're not fixing that. They haven't fixed that. And this is what this is going to find. But the other part here now, and they're also going to bring up the use of force stuff with Zach Rolfe. And look, that's fine. That probably very well is in play here on this. The issue that I have is when they say Andrew Barham will tell everybody in this courtroom that he used excessive force, that he was always out to get his man above all else. And it's like, holy good God, what is going on here? Andrew Barham has been discredited as a use of force expert. He was undermined unmercifully by Ben McDivitt, the AFP guy who actually wrote a handbook on police use of force at the murder trial. And McDivitt laughed at Barham and said, like, his testimony was bizarre, was his word to describe Barham. We know that Barham wasn't
It was bizarre. I mean, I read the transcript myself.
Where he was talking about shooting up the nose.
Yes, shooting up the nose. Like, what the heck?
That's all on the public record. And then you've got other issues now. And this is also on the public record already that Danny Bacon, Pete, remember your mate there, the cop, had said that this guy's got conflicts of interest. He shouldn't be the police's use of force expert, Barham. And then for some reason, he ends up being the police's use of force.
It's interesting. I mean, how long more have we got to go on this?
On the inquest? Another 2 months? Yeah.
Look, you would think that they would get to the bottom of all of that, wouldn't you, in the end?
That's the problem, Leon. I just don't think that's going to happen after watching this and reading transcripts, because there's no way that you would bring up Barham and say, yeah, he's going to tell you this, Your Honor. He's not credible. It's clearly being done for some other reason here. And that's where I'm just getting frustrated, because we know what happened as far as that side of it goes and what the police were concerned about. And that's not coming out. It hasn't come out in the first month about all of the issues. Like I said, the only one that's close to is when they said, oh, yeah, we should also talk about their recruitment processes. If Zach Rolfe was allowed to mislead on his application, why wasn't that picked up? That's what we got to be looking at, those kind of things, not running around with this thing that we want to say that there's systemic racism, because we know that. That is a fact. There is systemic racism. Spoiler alert for everybody on how this concludes. There's systemic racism in the police. There has been forever. They haven't changed it. Every time the coroner does a report, he says that, and they don't do anything about it. Anyway, it's just I just wanted to be looking at what the problems are, because the problems are huge. And if, again, as we get back to that line, if we don't know what the problems are, we don't know how to fix them, but we got to get to the bottom of that.
Hey, what about the fact that Zach Rolfe was number one recruit when he got in there? Top of the pops in every category.
Top of class, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look, we did the story on the state of the college, and I'm still concerned. I've not been given any assurances that it's any better than it ever was. And that was when it was failing, when they didn't even know who would pass what. I mean, to say he stopped a class, that's when, it's interesting because there's other documents that show that he probably didn't even show up on certain days or something. Like it was, they just completely disorganized in there.
Officer Hightower signed off on his paperwork. Anyway.
Yeah, it's just sad. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks very much. It's always deep and meaningful when we sit down and talk to you about stuff. And I mean, even though the inquest didn't figure in any of your articles this week, we've somewhat managed to give that a serve as well.
Well, and I said, when there's big stuff, it will come out. Or we will have it.
You got a stringer right down there, Chris?
Yeah. No, not at all. We're just getting it from the feed. Yeah.
Fair call. All right, Chris. Well, as always, mate, it's been very insightful. Thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks, guys. See you next week.
That was Chris Walsh from the NT Independent online newspaper. Weekends with Walshy, back again next week on the Territory Story Podcast Weekend Edition. We'll catch you then.
You've been listening to the Territory Story Podcast with Leon Logan Nathan and Peter Gowers. For more episodes, search Territory Story Podcast on all leading podcasting platforms or go to territorystory.com. The Territory Story Podcast, thanks to Opie Dennis Digital Marketing, your local digital marketing agency.